This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We mentioned the story before the break that the track and field team at UMSL has been notified just a couple of weeks ago that their program is being completely suspended. So very short notice to all of them, and there was an effort to get them to try and not do that. So joining us in studio, the captains of both the men's and women's track and field teams at UMSL, Will Kempfe and Ella Tynan, join us in studio. Guys, it's good to see you. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing okay. So tell us, as far as you know, and this has been written about in St. Louis Magazine, Sarah Fenske has written about it. As far as you know, why is this happening? And then tell us about when you were told of it.
From what we were told, it's basically just that the university isn't willing to support us. And it's been a few like things they're claiming, like we don't have a track on campus. And I think the direct quote was a lack of support in a 5-year plan, I think.
Mm-hmm. Because the track and field team is relatively newer,
yes,
compared to like the entire like UMSL campus, right? It's 5 years old.
Yes.
Correct. You guys were established with the idea that the program would grow. All under the understanding, we're starting the track and field program, we're going to grow it and make it.
And you're going to have facilities built for you, right? Was that the guarantee?
Not really. We okay. all knew what we were getting into by signing up for a program without those facilities. So it's just unfortunate that they've decided now that that's the deal breaker.
Yeah. And just to clarify, too, this was several years ago with Sam Page in St. Louis County that they wanted to build an indoor track in North County.
Yes.
And that would serve as the UMSL, at least part of the UMSL's resources for the track and field team. And while the establishment of the track and field team at UMSL would have looked forward to that facility, it was not, your existence was not contingent on the existence of that facility, which is now not being built.
Correct.
Correct, yeah.
So tell us how you were notified by it and what your thoughts were when you did find out.
Yeah, so we had a meeting. It was it was the day after indoor conference happened that we got messages from the coaches saying that we were having this meeting with, we didn't exactly know what the meeting was over, but they basically called us in and sat us all down. The athletic director came in and pretty much started talking and straight up just kind of told us, didn't really beat around the bush much, and told us that they've decided to pull the funding from the program and that as of 2026, the program would be non-existent anymore.
But there will be a cross-country team. They're keeping that side of things?
Yes.
So, yeah, and that is a big part of the confusion, I think, that comes along with this cut is, you know, the university made this big claim that this only affects 8 athletes because there's only 8 athletes that are track and field-only athletes. But at the same time, this has such a great impact on that cross-country team and the ability for it to succeed in the future as well. I believe, like, me and Ella have looked at some of the stuff and seen that I believe 70% of the team, both cross-country and track, is now in the transfer portal with the possibility of going to another university due to this track and field cut.
Because it is such a big deal for a lot of cross-country runners to also participate in track and field in the spring. Cross-country's in the fall. You use track and field in the spring to get ready to stay fit and to compete.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, track and field is, you know, one of the two pedestals of our sport. You know, it'd be like if you're trying to play another sport and you take an entire half of their sport away, mm-hmm. it takes the interest from a lot of the athletes to continue competing in that sport.
So Ella, you were saying that you found out about this and then you're in education, right?
Yes.
That's your major. And then you had to immediately go teach a class
yes.
to kids.
I was in that class. And so I got a text message from our coach, and there was me and two other people who weren't at the meeting. I got this text. I found out. It was like devastating. I think I started like sobbing in class, and then I had to like pull it together and go teach some kids math like 5 minutes later.
How did that go?
Shockingly well. I think I was in shock and I was like, I gotta do this. When I get out of here, I can like deal with this on my own, but I have to get through this.
I know one of the issues too, like you said, that came as a shock. And it's personal, right? It hurts, especially since you guys were part of a burgeoning program, you know, a program that you're building that's supposed to be part of UMSL. You pointed out some of the other sports may be coming, some of the athletes are from other states, other countries, and that's all great, but the track and field program was a lot of local, or is a lot of local students.
I think it's like 95% of our team is on in-state tuition, so it's almost all of us.
Yeah. We have, I know for a fact that over half the team is like St. Louis locals, and you know, it's more than any other program that UMSL has, and you know, it does kind of feel like almost dishonest from the university when they make these big claims that like their biggest impact is felt right here in the St. Louis area, just for them to turn around and cut the program that has the most people from the St. Louis area right here.
Did the university bring up anything about that track and field facility in North St. Louis County? Again, just to remind listeners, at one point $40 million was earmarked for that project. It was, I think, all part of like the convention center money and how they were going to use it. And County Executive Sam Page said now that the county can't afford to make good on that promise. In my head, I was like, thinking of Scott Stotts from The Office, like he promised to build this facility, he's not going to do it. I know it's not funny, but I just keep thinking of Scott Stotts. Did the university bring up the facility at all?
No. Ever since like they found out that couldn't happen, they really haven't talked about it much. At least I haven't heard anything about it.
No, as far as I've known, I mean, they've pretty much told us that I believe there's been two different times now. There was a time, I think, back in the 60s and a time more recent where the university had plans to build track and field facilities. Mm-hmm. And neither time were they able to make good on that. And then as far as they've kind of told us from here on out is that the university and the people who have the ability to fund things through the university, it's not that they necessarily don't have the money, it's that they have no interest in putting the money toward building track and field facilities and continuing to support the program.
So I know that tomorrow, and we'll get into this in a moment, but there is a march and a protest on
yes.
campus that is planned in support of this. But what sort of support have you gotten from either fellow students or anybody else in the community? Have you gotten anything like that?
I've gotten at least like so many people just reaching out and asking what they can do to help mm-hmm. or like what our next steps are, just so they can know and hopefully they can be of help. It's been honestly really unfortunate, but it's been really nice to have all these people reach out like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have had some bigger places who we've been in contact with who have voiced their support for us as well. I know like a local store, Running Niche, the co-owner, Mr. Dyer there has been very supportive of us, making some social media posts and stating that he is very supportive of us pushing for the program to be reinstated, as well as Big River, Fleet Feet, and STL Run Club mm-hmm. have all also voiced their support for us.
And you guys now, are you part of the civil rights complaint?
Not directly as okay. Individuals, no. The person who submitted the civil rights complaint was an individual who was on the team and was submitting that complaint on behalf of the entire team.
And saying that UMSL is violating Title IX obligations by cutting the track
Correct.
And field
Correct.
Team. In what way would they be? Because they're cutting men's and women's. That's what, I know what that's what listeners are mm-hmm. thinking first. Well, like, how is it Title IX? How would it be a violation?
There was, I think, a little bit of issue with some different numbers that we can't really go into, but
yeah.
also we are the largest women's team by participants. So then that UMSL is already out of line in Title IX, and that really does change the numbers. I think by participants, there is 30 women, around 30 women. So then that changes that.
45 total, right?
On the roster?
Yeah.
I believe, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So again, the protest and the march is tomorrow at 5:30. What can you tell people about it?
Yeah, so I mean, tomorrow, 5:30, it's going to be in the UMSL Quad, right in on the patio of the Millennium Student Center, which is kind of that like main hub of the UMSL campus. We are going to have some signs, some T-shirts, and we're going to be organizing a march to kind of walk through campus around that time. The hope is that around that time is going to be kind of the area where a lot of the athletic staff and general UMSL staff will kind of be coming out and being able to see as they kind of head out from work and everything like that, that they'll be able to see the march happening, hopefully be encouraged to do something about the situation that's occurring. And then as we kind of get toward the end of the march, we're going to finish it at the Athletic Center, Twain, where me, Ella, and several other athletes are going to have some speeches talking about our experience as well as kind of the reasons that we feel this decision has been wrong and why that is.
Is there anything that if people are listening, how can they support you?
Yeah.
If you can come to the march, send emails to, I think the list right now is like our athletic director.
Correct. Holly
and
Shelley.
Our chancellor.
Jessica Chandler. Yeah.
And our assistant athletic director.
Yes.
Just show your support in any way you can. I don't think the university realized the amount of backlash they would receive from cutting our program since it was a smaller program. And we're just kind of trying to prove that they were wrong about cutting us.
Yeah.
And what time does that march start again?
5:30 p.m.
5:30 p.m. And so, again, for students, but also just people who want to show support of you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, on the grounds of supporting as well, a lot of this information can all be found on Instagram and Facebook at Save UMSL Track. We have links where you can send emails to the athletic director as well as state and local officials in support to the UMSL track and field teams, as well as a lot of the different statistics showing really the numbers and the proof as to why this decision is a wrongdoing to the athletes and the community as a whole.
So that's Save UMSL Track on Instagram?
And Facebook.
And yes. Facebook. Will Kempfe, Ella Tynan, we wish you the best of luck, and hopefully everything goes well there. Let us know what more you need from us, and good luck at the protest and the march tomorrow. Perfect. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
We have the captains of both the men's and women's track team at UMSL, Will Kempfe and Ella Tynan with us. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX. Jamie Marks, Kors, and Chris Ranji, and our Mott's Madness tournament continues because over the weekend, we, in college basketball, men's college basketball, we got to the Final Four. So, you know, the Sweet 16 was decided, the Elite Eight, those games are over. All the number one seeds have moved on. In the Mott's Madness Best Pizza in St. Louis tournament, no such luck for all the number one seeds because we have just two that are still remaining as we have now reached the Elite Eight in the Mott's Madness tournament, Amy. And still, Emo's rolls on as they defeat Racanelli's. And in the Elite Eight matchup, they will take on the number 10 seed Filoni's, which defeated Olive and Oak.
Unbelievable.
I'm not surprised. Filoni's has a really good following.
It does.
It's a great place.
It's a loyal following. Would you consider that Dogtown?
I think it's
like
right on Manchester.
Edge.
Yeah.
On the edge.
I think it is considered Dogtown.
Well, in the sausage region.
Yep.
That's a nice pizza.
That's a nice pizza.
That's a nice pizza.
They beat Fortell's.
They beat Fortell's Pizza Den. They will be taking on number 3 seed Pizzeria de Gloria, which defeated La Pizza. And La Pizza has a loyal following. I mean, it is getting brutal now.
More like Pizzeria defeated, right?
Oh, my gosh.
Is that what you meant? I've never been to Pizzeria de Gloria. I've heard good things.
Have you ever been to That's a Nice Pizza?
La Pizza lost. I have not been to That's a Nice Pizza. I still can't
believe. Can you believe that we haven't gotten any pizza during this whole tournament?
Not
all
one?
All we do is talk about pizza. We haven't eaten any.
Talked about all your stupid pizza places, and not one of you has brought any by. What's the matter with you?
I think that's illegal.
I think it is illegal. So in the... What region is this again?
Mushroom.
Hold on a second. The mushroom region.
Right?
It shrunk on me. Oh, it hit me right in the mushroom.
Your mushroom region shrunk?
It shrunk. You ever put them in a pan? They shrink immediately. Nick and Elena's defeats hot pizza cold beer to advance to the Elite Eight, and they will face Vito's.
Mm.
Vito's defeated Uncle Leo's.
Where is Nick and Elena's again?
Matt, where is Nick and Elena's?
Nick and Elena's, that's funny that you asked that.
Is it because you...
Typing furiously.
Last time that I checked.
That's like
it was
what?
In Overland.
Oh, in Overland.
In Overland.
Okay.
Okay, well, in the pineapple and ham region, number one, Dewey's.
Wow.
Defeats Antonino's.
That's big. That's
They're
a huge
matchup.
They're
taking on 15 seed.
Yep.
Alfonso's, which we don't know which one it is, which means they could be getting double votes because there are two Alfonso's. They are not related.
Mm-hmm.
So Dewey's is technically taking on two pizza places.
Yeah, Alfonso's beats Cyberg's.
Wow.
Alfonso's a win over Cyberg's.
Well, do you have the numbers for that or no? I don't have the numbers
yes.
for Cyberg's.
72% of the vote, almost 73%
what?
Of the vote went to Alfonso's.
See, I think Cyberg's could file a protest.
Well, they could.
Because they technically went up against two Alfonso's.
You know, there's a Cyberg's right down the street. They could bring us some pizza and we could solve this whole
well,
thing.
Well, that's illegal.
Oh, that's right. Alfonso's, yeah, we don't know which Alfonso's it is. We just, it was suggested to us. We put it into the tournament.
The problem with
there are two yeah. different Alfonso's, one in Carrollton and one in Troy, both in Illinois.
Yeah.
But they are not related. So we don't know which one is winning. I think it's
well,
Troy.
Well, they're both winning.
Well, we don't know if people are voting, like which Alfonso's they're voting for.
I think they're voting for both. That's what I mean.
I don't know. That I bet it's
you're getting
I bet it's,
you're getting pooled votes here
I
because
bet it's
Alfonso's
Troy.
Means whatever you think it means, whatever you want it to mean.
So it's an abstract.
It's an abstract. It's an ephemeral.
This
thing. An ephemeral thing.
That is too bad, man.
I know. So now Dewey's. I mean, Dewey's has got a. Get ready to throw some fisticuffs.
This is sad. I don't know what to do.
Well, I don't know that it's sad. It's more of scandalous.
Again, we're doing another scandal.
I love scandals.
We have a text message wants to know if Felix has made the tournament. It did. It lost early, didn't it?
Which is crazy because Felix's is so good. Felix's Pizza in downtown. I don't see it. Where is it?
I don't know if it made the cut.
Oh, my gosh.
Who took it out of the tournament?
This? Who did? Did you do this?
We did not submit it the first time.
I did.
We all did.
Yeah, it's
I
on
did.
The list.
All right. Unbelievable.
You gave me 75 names.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. We got to start over.
What a... Yeah, well, let's start the tournament all
because
over again.
Because we can clarify Alfonso's 1 and Alfonso's 2.
Unbelievable.
And then we can put Felix. This is unbelievable. And Angelo's. Angelo's in Florissant, I think it is.
Angelo's, yep.
Didn't make it.
That's just
this is ridiculous.
Complete
what kind
madness.
Of, what kind of scammy ramshackle
slip shot? Who put this stupid tournament together?
What tournament is this?
I don't like it. That's
I got no respect.
I quit. I absolutely quit.
You know
quit.
What? This is when you hire bad people. This is what happens.
This is what happens.
No respect.
Yeah, well, poor Matt. All right, well, you can vote. Soon, we will have the polls up on Twitter. You need to follow us at ChrisAmyKMOX, and you can vote for the Elite Eight in our Mott's Madness Tournament. So, best of luck to all of the pizza places which are participating today.
And the first delivery is raked into left field for a hit over the third baseman's head, and it's going to the corner. Donnie is headed to third base, and there's no play there. In the second is Arenado, and the Cardinals in business here in the third inning. A single and a double and nobody out.
Yo, Paulie!
Paulie's a great name.
Yo, Paulie!
What'd you do for Paulie? Anything?
Me, Paulie! I was responsible!
Paulie, we're here because of you!
What a weekend for the St. Louis Cardinals, who started their season without a loss. They are 3-0 to start the year for the first time since 2006. They sweep a series to begin their season. They've got the Angels of Los Angeles and or Anaheim. They are in town tonight at Busch Stadium. We go to the guest line and we bring in Matt Pauley, who's our sports fella, host of pre and post game coverage for the Cardinals, host of the Redbird Rush Hour, which happens at 5 o'clock every day when pregame doesn't get in the way. And then, of course, Sports Open Line. Matt Pauley, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you guys?
Great.
Great
start for the Cardinals, man.
Fantastic. They didn't do anything poorly this weekend. They hit, they pitched, they were good in the field. I mean, that was a well put together three games for the Cardinals.
Yeah, Matt, we were talking about how I know, you know, spring training doesn't mean anything, but a little worried when the Cardinals as a whole weren't hitting in Florida. And then they have their opening weekend like they did, where they weren't just hitting, but they were hitting in clutch situations.
Yeah, so that was one of the issues last year, right? That they could not get a hit with runners in scoring position. And they did that a lot this weekend. Yeah, it's three games. It means the results of these three games mean just a little bit more than, you know, absolutely nothing. It's three games. It's a tiny sample size. But I was just running their numbers compared to the rest of the division. I tweeted this out. Their runs per game over the weekend, 6.3. Number two in the division was Milwaukee at 4.7. They had a 306 average this weekend. That was number one in the division. Milwaukee at 236 was second. They had a 909 OPS this weekend. Cincinnati was second in the division at 605. So, I mean, they dominated compared to what the other teams in the division did. They also had the best ERA, the best fielding percentage of every team in the division. So I keep saying just three games doesn't mean much, but what we can say is they had a really, really good weekend. It was good to see.
I'm going to ask you about the Brewers in a moment as it pertains to their opening series and something interesting that poor Nestor Cortez. Woof. Anyway, Matt loves it so much. Your former team got just pounded by the Yankees. So we'll talk about that in a second. But Nolan Arenado had a good weekend, too. Not only did he get really good ovations from the crowds, but, you know, for a guy who thought he may not be here when the season started, we don't know how his year is going to go. We know how it's gone the last couple of seasons for him and not really Arenado-like. So it was nice to have him produce the way he did in the opening series and just hoping it continues now.
Yeah, so I'm going to go a little nerdy here on you, and I know that people sometimes kind of shake their heads when they start hearing about underlying numbers, but this means something. I'll give credit. There's a guy on Twitter, @JacobE_STL. He found this information, and I saw it, and I thought it tells a really good story. Last year, it took Nolan Arenado 15 games to register 10 swings with a bat speed above 75 miles per hour. In less than three games, he got to 10 swings at that. So what that tells you, again, nobody's putting bat swing speed on the back of a baseball card. I understand that. But what that tells you is bat speed leads to production. It leads to damage. It leads to extra base hits. It leads to home runs. It leads to all the things that Arenado did not do last year. Now, there's nothing guaranteed he's going to keep that up. He is someone who's been a little bit prone to injuries in his career. If his back starts to get a little bit achy, that bat speed really slows down. But for him to do in less than three games what it took him to do 15 games last year on one of these underlying numbers, I think that tells a really good story that start to give a little bit of an indication on why Arenado looked good this weekend.
And for Nolan Gorman, that's the person who is going to lose playing time as a result of Arenado being here. Well, he took advantage in the one game he was able to play, four at bats and three hits and a home run included there. So
the one he didn't get a hit on was a hard hit ball. I mean, yeah. Gorman looked good at the plate yesterday.
And we know he can be streaky. I mean, that's a thing that's been true of him since he's been here. But, you know, when he has games like that, or, you know, how much does it really affect? And again, it's very, very small sample size. But how much does it affect the sort of playing time he will end up getting? And will he force his way into the lineup?
It should impact it. As a manager, if you're Oliver Marmol, you try to put the best lineup on the field every day. So if every time you put Nolan Gorman in there, he produces, you're going to put him in there more. And it creates that internal competition that you want. Like if you're Alec Burleson, that pushes you a little bit. Burleson did not have an especially great start to the season. In his three games, He was 2-for-11, a .182 average. And Burleson seems to be the guy who kind of pushed in front of Gorman for that DH spot in what is the base lineup. So if Gorman keeps hitting and Burleson doesn't, you can make that switch there. And if at some point in time Gorman stops hitting and Burleson gets hot, guess what? You switch it out. So going with the hot hand is something that you should do over a 162-game season. And it's not just like an immediate reaction. You know, if Jordan Walker or if Nolan Arenado, like if anybody all of a sudden goes cold for a few days, that doesn't mean, oh, let's go find somebody else to put in that spot. But there is something to be said for looking at the guys who are hot at any given moment and trying to get them in the lineup as much as possible.
It also, what's great about what happened this weekend is they did it without any contribution offensively from Wilson Contreras, who's 0-for-14 now. And I am not at all worried about him offensively. He's going to hit. That's not, unless he's hurt, he's not a problem. But if they can get production from everybody else on nights where he doesn't contribute, that would be big for the offense.
It would. So, you know, I had somebody say on one of my postgame shows over the week, it was on Saturday, and he said, man, Wilson Contreras looks terrible. And my answer is no, he doesn't. He's not getting hits. But especially in that first game on Thursday, man, he had some fantastic at-bats. He just kind of had some bad luck, and he didn't get hits. I thought Saturday he did not look as good as he looked Thursday, but he didn't look terrible. He still had some nice at bats. And I even think, he didn't strike out. He went 0-for-5 yesterday, but he didn't strike out a single time. So he's right there. I'm not concerned about him. He had a good spring. He's the most dangerous hitter in the lineup, without a doubt. He's going to be just fine.
Not even a little worried about him.
Not even a little. No.
Nope.
So Contreras, as you mentioned, had a good spring. Hasn't hit yet, but you're not worried about it. Mason Wynn struggled in spring and he hasn't had a hit yet. Are you worried about him?
Yes, that's a very different situation. Wynn did not look especially good in spring. I kind of left open the possibility that all that was going on in spring was him just working on some things. You know, pitch selection was one of the big things for him. So I had thought maybe he would just kind of turn it on once the season got started. We have not seen that from him yet. Yesterday, he has 2 strikeouts. He has struck out 5 times in his first 9 at-bats over his first 3 games. I think there's reason to at least be cognizant. I don't know if it's crossed over the line into concern, but if it is concern, I think it's a valid concern. Wynn doesn't have a multi-year track record in the big leagues. He was very good last year. But he hasn't put it together multiple years. He had a tough spring, and now he's had a tough start to the season. And there's not really the opportunity on the roster to be able to give him a break. They don't have a backup shortstop. If they have to play somebody there, they're going to have to go with Brendan Donovan. And Donovan's going to be respectable there, but, I mean, that's not really a spot that you want to put him. So Wynn's going to be asked to play every single day. He's going to be asked to work himself out of this, and hopefully it is something that comes around.
So tonight, Miles Michaelis is going to get the start against the Angels. But so far, in terms of starting pitching and bullpen work, it's been, I mean, Gray and Fetty and Pallante have all been pretty good in their first starts of the season. So you're hoping that Michaelis continues that because they're going to need it from him this year.
Yeah, the team has an ERA at 2 right now. So obviously just about every single player who has gone out there onto the mound has done a nice job. So the question is, what do you see from Miles Michaelis? Because Michaelis is a guy that has struggled over his last 2 seasons specifically. He has a +5 ERA over his last 2 years, just from last year. He worked on a lot of things during spring. He's trying to throw some more pitches off the plate. You know, he throws so many strikes. He throws too many strikes. He throws too many middle strikes. And that's been something that he's been cognizantly working on. So if he's ahead on a guy 0-2, it's okay to waste a pitch. And when you waste a pitch, that doesn't mean just throw it way outside, but just go a little bit off the zone where it's going to be a really tough pitch for a hitter to do something with. So in spring, he looked pretty good. 3.66 ERA, 19 2/3 innings, only gave up 8 runs, only gave up 20 hits, 11 strikeouts, only 5 walks. So he is somebody who historically has been successful in spring. And that hasn't always translated into good numbers in the regular season. So his task tonight against the Angels is to go out there and continue doing what he did this spring.
So, as I mentioned, well, first of all, tonight's pregame show with Matt Pauly is at 5:50, and the first pitch is at 6:45. Cardinals continue their season, trying to go 4-0 to start the year. Wanted to talk to you about what happened to the Brewers, and they got absolutely clobbered. And Nestor Cortez, I had never seen this before, and this includes a home run from Paul Goldschmidt, who hit leadoff in that first game of the season, and it was him, Aaron Judge, and now it's escaping
Bellinger.
Yep. Three pitches, three home runs off Nestor Cortez and the Brewers.
That, to start the game.
Start the game.
Right. First three pitches thrown by Nestor Cortez in the bottom of the first inning.
Who's now with the Brewers. Yeah.
Yeah. He was part of the Devin Williams trade in the offseason. The Brewers sent Devin Williams to the Yankees. The Yankees sent a bunch of players back to the Brewers, including Nestor Cortez. So he's facing off against his former team. First three pitches that he throws all get hit out. He gives up five home runs in two innings before he gets removed. Yankees hit nine home runs in the game. That is one short of the major league record set by Toronto, I believe, in the 80s. Wow. That was the Brewers. And by the way, then the Brewers follow that up the next day by giving up 12 runs yesterday. The Brewers team ERA through the first three games of the season is 12.75. It's not good. And that's just something you've never seen before for Cortez to go out there, three pitches, three home runs.
Also, what was really incredible in that game, and we discovered it because I guess people noticed how different some of the Yankees bats, like their actual physical baseball bats, looked. And I've heard them referred to as torpedoes or bowling pins.
They look like kind of swollen in the middle, or like because the weight has been pushed down.
They taper at the end.
Yes, it's not an even distribution of weight.
They were designed by an MIT physicist, and apparently they are legal. So
They look illegal.
But they're not. So are teams going to adopt this? Are more players around baseball going to use them?
I don't know. It's a good question. You know, Aaron Judge did not use one, and he had a pretty good weekend. He hit four home runs in the three games. One of the Twins players had one. Ryan Jeffers for the Twins used it against the Cardinals, and Jeffers is hitting 125 right now, so it's not helping him out. I don't like it in the sense that historically, if you've gotten a player to hit the ball at that spot of the bat as a pitcher, basically you've done your job, because there's probably not going to be solid contact. And now there is solid contact. So that, to me, that kind of changes the game. So I don't love that. But in the same sense, that type of bat is actually being used a little bit more than I think people realize. And that guy who worked for the Yankees doesn't even work for the Yankees anymore.
He's a Marlins coach.
Marlins guy. Yeah. So I don't know. I think Major League Baseball should at least take a look at it. But I'm not overly bothered by it. I need more of a sample size than three games from the Yankees to see it.
All right. Before we let you go, I do have to bring up a gutsy victory by the St. Louis Blues against Colorado that was an 11-game home win streak. The Blues extended their winning streak to 9 games. The last 2 minutes of that game were pandemonium. Players diving left and right, blocking shots. Justin Falk had a 1 minute, 45-second shift, which is the hockey equivalent of an ultramarathon. Like, that's like your body's just dead at that point. Mm-hmm. Colorado had 8 shot attempts in that at the end of that game, and the Blues hang on. It's starting to feel pretty special, Matt.
Yeah, you said it there. What a win that was. And there's been a bunch of wins like that. Even, you know, when I was walking out of the ballpark the night of opening night, they had the Blues game up on the big screen out there over in the Ballpark Village, and they were down in that game. And then, you know, I listened to a little bit driving home, and they stayed down. And I get home, and then, you know, do a few things. I sit down at my computer, and boom, I look at the score, and they won against Nashville 3-2. For them to, you know, that game against Colorado, in many ways it felt like, okay, you got your point. Get to overtime, you got your point. Mm-hmm. Well, they do the opposite of that. They're able to score late. They get their 2 points. It doesn't really matter if Colorado gets, you know, none or one or whatever. It doesn't matter. But this is a lot of fun right now. Man, this is a lot of fun. They've got like an 85% chance right now to be a playoff team. It is incredible. It is remarkable. It is unexpected. Even with Jim Montgomery, and as much as I really like him, you know, he had been a coach. He'd been with the team for a while, and they still hadn't found themselves out of that inconsistent up and down roller coaster. And then something happened, and this team is on a really special run. And I promise you, there is no team in the NHL that's going to want to face the Blues in the playoffs.
They are 6 points ahead of Vancouver. The Blues have 7 games left to go. Canucks have 8 games left to go. The Wild also have 8 games left to go. And the Blues are tied with them in points. So that's your 1 and 2 wild card teams right now. So, I mean, it would take... I don't even know why I want to say it, but it would just take an absolute horrible collapse for that to not happen, I would think, at this point.
Oh, the only problem is Calgary has a bunch of games in hand. That's
they have three games in hand, yep, and they are 7 points back.
Right, so that if Calgary wins all of those games in hand, then it gets a little tighter.
Just keep take care of business.
Take care of business.
Keep stacking points. All right, so you've got Redbird Rush Hour leading into the pregame show tonight?
That's right, and then... What's the game? I should know this. What's the game time tonight?
6:45. Your pregame show is at 5:50.
Thanks. Thank you.
So Redbird Rush Hour with you and Kevin Wheeler talking Cardinals baseball from 5 until 5:50, and then the pregame show, and then the ball game tonight.
Okay, I've written that down, Chris. Thank you for telling me my schedule for the evening.
Anything else you need me to tell you about your schedule?
What should I have for dinner tonight?
Corn on the cob, and that's it.
Corn on the cob.
Yeah.
That's not enough at all.
Elotes. Have that instead.
You need some protein, Matt. Don't listen to this guy.
Thanks, guys.
Yo, Paulie, your sister's with me. I'll call you back later. See ya.
That's right. Redbird Rush Hour with Matt Paulie and Kevin Wheeler, 5 to 5:50, then the pregame, then the ballgame. And don't forget, at 12 o'clock today is the Gas House Gang. We will talk baseball, Tom Ackerman and me. We're going to be joined by John Rooney at one point in the game. And then tomorrow, the beginning of something we are very excited about. Every Tuesday from 12 to 12:30, Oliver Marmol will join the show. It's going to be Tom, Bernie Miklas, me, Oliver Marmol for a half hour. 12 to 12:30, that is every Tuesday. It's going to happen on the Gas House Gang here on KMOX.
I know 3 games is a small sample, but it's a great start to the series. I checked with the Cardinal Hall of Fame and Museum yesterday, and they could not come up with a time that the Cardinals had ever won the opening series at home. In 2006, we won it against the Phillies. So a good start for the season. Looking forward to today's game and looking forward to a great Cardinal season.
Charlie with a voice message on the Odyssey app, and to answer your question,
yes,
the last time they swept a series to start the year, a 3-0 start at Busch Stadium, was 2003, so not even in this ballpark.
It was the old Busch Stadium.
Yep.
Who did they beat?
The Brewers.
The Brewers.
They swept the Brewers. It's really interesting because I was going back through all their opening day opponents, and it was always the Cubs, Pirates, or Reds forever and ever and ever. And then it changed in the last 15, 20 years. And they're going to play at Fenway Park on Friday for their home opener in Boston, which is very cool. So I would love for them to sweep this Anaheim series because they have not been 7-0 to start the year since 1962. So they could be 6-0 and then go to Boston and win that one. They could be 7-0. I'm getting ahead of myself, but I don't care.
You are getting ahead of yourself.
That's right.
Well, that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it would be.
I mean, but then again, it's like the Blues. It all depends on when you get hot.
You'd rather be hot at the end of the year, but it's also nice
to have
to bank wins early.
That's right.
So we'll see what they keep doing, but it's a good start so far.
Hey, it's Monday. That means it's time for Monday Regrets. I have a Monday regret. Really kept me up late on Friday night.
Oh, boy.
So 314-436-7900. You can text or call your Monday regret, or you can go to the Odyssey app, the KMOX page. There's a microphone icon. Leave us a voice message like Charlie did.
Yeah.
Super easy. You might just hear yourself on our Monday regret segment, which is next.
You can text this too if you don't want to talk. If you want to text, you can do that, 314-436-7900. What do you regret from the weekend, the previous week, or your life, and you haven't gotten it off your chest yet? This is the time to do it. Monday Regrets next on the Chris and Amy Show.